Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Satatta tatra runapalava shriya palapasunora barena padeo spisachikan viksha vanaspatam mudha Mayamivagra Jamadi Purusha Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmalatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dadati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. greetings from New Jersey. I see most of the people are from the morning, but there's also quite a few that are new. before I get on to the pastime, I would just like to say something about the current situation. I think it's a nice way to connect. And that's what we're doing here. We're connecting in Sangha. Anga means limbs. I think Sangha means with limbs. We have a body. We're all a community. We're all different limbs of that community. And like a body, we're nourishing the same thing. And that creates, as explained in Rasa Shastra Rasa, I explained that. There's a special feeling when everyone is experiencing the same thing. It somehow creates a bit of a transcendent feeling that enables us to overcome the limited concept of I. And the limited concept of I is I am the center. The unlimited concept of I is I am the servant. Because you can be the servant in any situation. And you can be the controller and master in illusion in very few, because we're not the controller and therefore we can't be the enjoyer. But, you know, I have these like three big windows on the bottom floor here, and I look out and I can watch occasionally some people walking. And the vision I have is purity. The mode of goodness. What does the mode of goodness mean? The mode of goodness means sattva. Sattva means the nature of being or reality. And what does that mean? The way things are before they're transformed by us and the modes of nature. So it's sattva. It's just like usually you only experience sattva in the early morning before everybody rises with their passion and ignorance. Well, they don't rise with their ignorance, they rise with their passion. But so now we have that all through the day. Things are not changed. They're in the mode of goodness. I describe just like the mind when the mind is in sattva, the nature of a mind, it's a lens or a mirror. Chaito dharpana marginam. Chaita, chitta. So what's the nature of the mind? It's clear and not distorted. And when it's clear and not distorted, then it's the nature of the mind, and therefore can do the function of the mind. And you get perception, and with perception you get contentment. So I'm just looking out at the world. The world is in quarantine. And there's a certain clarity to it. And the reason I'm mentioning this, because it's relevant to today's discussion, because Krishna is going to enter the forest of Vrindavan. And one of the things that he sees for his pleasure is lakes that are crystal clear. It's like the Hudson. Can you imagine when living in New York, when the Hudson River was just clear water flowing? And the idea was, it's crystal clear. It gives pleasure to Krishna in many ways. Because when things are in sattva, what is the object of vision in the mode of goodness? It's cleanliness. When the object of sight is cleanliness, it's goodness, it moves your mind to goodness. That's why I believe it was Paramahamsa Yogananda that said that environment is more powerful to change consciousness than our willpower. So when the environment is in such a sattvic type vision, it has an effect on the consciousness. It's very interesting. It's having an effect on the whole planet. The consciousness of the whole planet is being elevated just by the vision of sight, which is in the mode of goodness. And that's the platform of transcendence. It's a simple analogy that's used to describe passion, goodness, and ignorance of a spark. When a spark falls in the wet grass, it extinguishes. When it falls in ordinary grass, maybe it'll dry it and come to flame, or maybe not. When it's in the dry grass, it energizes its nature. It can again become fire. So it's the same thing with our consciousness. When we associate with goodness, it's the platform where we can actually transcend. And that's why when Krishna moves to the lakes of Vrindavan, they're inviting for him to actually enjoy And therefore, the lakes of Vrindavan are compared to the minds of great souls, which are very clear, and they're inviting Krishna to enter within the mind. And Krishna enters within the mind of great souls, which is why, and this is a very interesting point, in the Satva Yuga, there were no deities. Because people would be so pure that Krishna would be manifest in their mind. And it's only in the Treta Yuga, when the great sages saw that people were not so pure, either to manifest Krishna in mind or to respect without envy Krishna manifest in the mind of people, that the sages manifested deity worship. It was not manifest in the Satya Yuga. People didn't need it. So somehow or other, that's another analogy. We don't have temples now to go to, but we have more of a manifestation of goodness to manifest Krishna in our own minds and to share it with others. This has been really great for me. Just the regulation and the focus. Anyway, so I kind of shared something about that, and about what's happening now, and of course, we're stuck in a situation that's not conducive to spiritual life, but we're dependent on it for our own security and maintenance. It's a very tough situation. Now, what I want to do today is I want to relish Krishna Katha. I actually looked over, there's a godbrother of mine called Radha Govinda Swami, and I used to see him in Vrindavan. And actually, I remember one time I was, of course, my habit in Vrindavan is at 4 or 4:30 for the last 20, 30 years, I just come out of my room or in my room, and I begin to speak Krishna Katha. And I never advertised it. Only someone says, Maharaj, are you speaking? I say yes. And then it begins. And there's a varied amount of people because people are coming in and out. So one time I was in Vrindavan during the month of Shravan, and it was before Janmashtami. And I wanted to speak on Krishna's birth. So I remember what I do is like a half hour before class and a half hour before he had to go to his class, I'd run up to his room and I'd tell him, tell me something about this verse. And he'd give me such beautiful points about the verse. And I actually found his notes for this chapter too. But I remember one thing was really interesting. There were so many points interesting. In Krishna Lila, when Kamsa is driving the chariot of his cousin's sister, Devaki, and Krishna's father, Vasudev, there's an Akashvani, there's an unembodied voice from the sky, and it says, Kamsa, you're such a fool, because you're carrying the container in which the womb, within the, in which the eighth child will be, will kill you. And of course, Kamsa, being a demon, has extreme narcissistic personality disorder, which means that you only see the world according to your desires. And therefore, you see the way the world should be is according to your desires. That's your truth. And to the extent we have it, we're narcissistic. And we're all tinged with that. We want the world our way, and we see the world our way. And when it comes to such an extent, like someone who's a demon, if they see they want something that belongs to someone else, they think it is theirs. And that's the cause of all wars in the world. There's another person's property. There's another person's land. And you see it and want it. Therefore, you think you see the world according to your desires, because I want it, it's mine. And therefore, if someone is a threat to your existence, then in your world, that person shouldn't exist. And we see dictators, they'll kill their uncle, they'll kill anyone. He's ready to kill his sister because she will produce someone who does not facilitate his enjoyment and control in the world. And then he's ready to kill his own sister. But the point is, who were those people who had given Kamsa that message? It wasn't the demons, it was the demigods. And why did they give him that message? Because he was a powerful demon. And he was serving a great devotee on the chariot. And therefore they were fearful that there's nothing more empowering than serving a great devotee. And they wanted to stop it. They wanted to stop it. So in that way, I would get different things from him. And then one day, Bhurijan Prabhu approached him because he's an incredible Bhagavatam scholar, and asked him, how do you study? And his answer was very, very revelatory. His answer was, I don't, I just relish. So what I want to do today, I guess there'll be philosophy, but I just want to relish. And because that's what the Bhagavatam is. The Bhagavatam is to inspire us to serve Krishna. And what's the main impetus for wanting to serve Krishna? The main impetus for any activity is exemplars of the thing and desire you want. And I've quoted Voltaire many, many times that which you appreciate gradually belongs to you. So in the process of bhakti, we have to see devotion and hear about devotion to see how beautiful it is. Because it's antithetical to the way to our existence in this world, born of false ego, which is exactly the opposite. It's this sense of superiority that's driving us, and which is creating our faith so subtly. Faith meaning, I will be happy if I enjoy, if I control, if I have more. But if you see the beauty of what is a devotee and the beauty of the object of that devotion, then maybe a drop of that faith will enter into your heart. I want that. That is the thing that is most beautiful. And that's called the Bhakti Lata Beej. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai. Bhakti Lata Beej. What is that seed of devotion? It's the conception based on experience, that serving God and serving devotees is the best thing. And one of the main ways in which that conception, that experience is engendered in your heart, and that conception is to hear the Bhagavatam, which is specifically composed to engender that feeling in you. That's why it's called Rasa Shastra. Because what is rasa? Rasa means an emotion that's heightened to its greatest degree. And in our conception, that's bhakti rasa. What is the Bhagavatam? What is the ultimate reality? It is bhakti rasa. It is devotion heightened to its highest degree. And what is rasa shastra? It's a shastra or a spiritual text that is perfectly composed to represent that, so that if you hear it with some faith and in the right way, that same feeling will go to you. It's just like watching any movie. If it's a good drama or a good movie or a good drama, if it succeeds, it will give you some feeling in the heart, whatever the drama is representing, whether it's romance or chivalry. I remember this Kshatriya-type devotee, and he was running this ashram, and he sat down all his Sankirtan devotees, and he put on this film that he liked. I never saw it, The Last of the Samurai Warriors. And so why did he put it on? Because it's about chivalry. And he wanted to put that in the hearts of those people. Well, Vyasadeva wanted to put that, the feeling of bhakti ras, in the hearts of the people of Kali Yuga. And that's why he composed the Bhagavatam. He wanted to communicate that. And he did so many ways to try to communicate the Vedas, but remained dissatisfied. And then he had this inclination that was confirmed by his guru. He hadn't sufficiently glorified Krishna, which is the most powerful transformatory spiritual process. You have to understand, it's the editor of the Vedas trying it to communicate it in Kali Yuga. Communicate what? Transformation. From what? From ego, sense of superiority, to seva, a mood of service. From the false conception of the self to the real conception of the self, which is the soul, which is consciousness, which is meant to reach its fruition in service, and that's its pleasure. And he was just thinking so hard, how can I do this? And he's thinking of the frame of reference of the audience, because he's an editor, he's a writer, he's a communicator. You can't communicate something if someone doesn't have a frame of reference for it. And I heard the most simple example, I'll repeat it again, of a young girl. She cannot understand romance if she's 5 or 6 years old. When she reaches puberty, and has an experience of that, a feeling of that, then she can understand it. It's a simple, it's a simple communicatory point that you have to speak through people's frame of reference, which means if you want to explain something, they have to have a preliminary conception of it. That's why this is a very important point in the Svetashvatara Upanishads. One of the main verses is Yasya Deve Parabhaktir Tata Deve, one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord, the imports of the Vedas are revealed. Why? Because what is the import of the Vedas? The import of the Vedas is removing false ego. That is the import of the Vedas. That is the whole purpose of the Vedas. But why do you need to surrender to Guru and Krishna? Because unless you have some preliminary experience of that practically, you will not be able to see it within the text. That's just a fact. And therefore, one who surrendered to Guru and Krishna and has that experience of what I call happy small, the mood of service, the mood of transcendence of false ego and the beauty of it, then when he sees the Shastra, he'll be able to see it. That's why we don't jump to the 10th canto. Because if we jump to the 10th canto or don't have someone who's explaining it in the right context, we will not understand it because we don't have the experience of devotion to see it within the text. But if you have that, that's why 9 cantos first and then the 10th canto in our systematic study. But this is the purpose of our devotional practices. Our devotional practices are to have an experience of devotion, to have an understanding of devotion, to have a context of devotion, so that when we read Krishna's pastimes, we will see what is actually there. Not young boys playing, not boys and girls in romance, but the expression of the highest devotion and love. And when you hear and see it in that way, which is the most attractive thing, the sweetness of devotion, the sweetness of love, which is so much akin to actually ourself. That is our nature, like a fish in water. That is our nature, our nitya. What is our nitya dharma? What is the duty that's there in every circumstance, as opposed to naimittika dharma? Naimittika dharma means I have a dharma as a woman. Next life, I don't have that dharma. I'm a man. I have the woman. I have the dharma as a kshatriya. And then it changes. I have a dharma as a brahmachari. Now you have a dharma as a grihastha. It changes. But nitya dharma, the eternal dharma, is service to Krishna. And that's the essence of the soul. The essence, dharma also means essence. Essence means the quality which cannot be taken away from something. The essence of water is liquidity. If I give you something and it's not wet, it's not water. So what is our essence? Our essence is service. And the perfect service is when it's so consuming in the consciousness, so overwhelming in the consciousness, it comes to the point of pure love. So let's begin now the story. And I will get up to today's verse, which actually will just focus on the trees of Vrindavan. You have to understand how significant this verse is. Will come. Krishna comes to the forest. He's so excited to come to the forest. Udrayan. He's blowing his flute loudly for the pleasure of the forest. Tatra, tatra, it says in this verse. Everywhere. What does he see everywhere? Everywhere he sees devotion. And devotion means to offer the best. Every animal, every tree, every entity, every element in Vrindavan wants to please Krishna and is empowered by Krishna because it is his playground to offer the best to Krishna as an expression of that devotion. So he's coming into the forest, tatra tatra, and he's so joyful. He's so joyful. because the forest is his playground that facilitates loving exchanges. This is the secret of sacred space. Why is one place higher than the other? We have this amazing thing in the Upadeshamrita, this amazing thing that one place is better than the other. Better than Vaikuntha is Vrindavan. Vrindavan meaning the 12 forests. And better than the 12 forests, the greater Brajbhumi, is the forest of Vrindavan. And better than that, in Vrindavan, is Govardhan. And better than that is Radhakund, which, just by the way, I spoke to Leela Velasini yesterday, and they're letting the restrictions go. A very interesting thing. Anybody who's quarantined in Vrindavan now is getting the mercy of Krishna, because they don't allow anyone else into Vrindavan. Only the people that are there. So she told me her husband has a motorcycle and they drove off in the morning to Radhakund. No cars, no rickshaws. You can hear the voices of people in the distance. Then she said it, at about 11:30, all the old famous babas and sadhus, about 11 o'clock or 11:30, with their young assistants, they come and you watch them bathe in the Jamuna. So, science of sacred space. Why is one space better than another? One space is better than the other by the facility it gives one to experience intimate love. And is why we like our living room better than the office, for example. And it's created in a particular way to facilitate family relationships. So as God desires to enjoy greater and greater degrees of intimate love, then his determination is an absolute fact. So an environment manifests. And when he wants to enjoy the most intimate love, that's Vrindavan. And more intimate love, that's Govardhan. And more, then it's Radhakund. He's entering into that forest of Vrindavan. He's entering into, and tatra-tatra, everywhere he sees the forest of Vrindavan in joy. He's entering into that forest. And at the end of the chapter, he will be leaving the forest. He enters the forest. He doesn't like to wear so much jewelry when he's going to the forest to play for his friends, but his mother just has so much love for him. She wants to decorate him. That's her love. So he's wearing diamonds and he has various jewels. And when he comes back from the forest, it's kind of disarrayed, but he's decorated with the clay and the minerals and the twigs and these type of scenes. And we actually, it's very interesting, who's describing them but Sukadeva Goswami? And he's so much in ecstasy that when he's describing these particular scenes, when Krishna is going into the forest, it's almost as Sukadeva Goswami is in the forest and viewing this. And when he leaves the forest, it's almost he's in the town and viewing this. And the idea is, right in the beginning, Krishna's lotus feet, ativa punya, extremely auspicious. Connection with Krishna is extremely auspicious. Because what's most auspicious is happiness and love. And connection with God brings that out with what in one's heart. So we see the forest, the deer, when Krishna comes into the forest, the forest, it's described, it's filled with nourishment everywhere. Out of love, the forest is It's not just growing, it's loving. The grasses are the land's hair standing on end. The rivers are tears of ecstasy. And it's so nourished that the cows are just so absorbed. Krishna only has to spend a few minutes, an hour with the cows. And his older brother loves him so much. This is rasa. He loves him so much that Krishna wants fruit. Balaram climbs the tree. A cow goes away. Balaram gets the cow. So, but tatva tatra. And this is what we'll get to today. But why is the first thing that Krishna is appreciating is the trees? And the hint to that is, and I believe, Bhagavad Gita verse 9:6. So now what we'll do is called two things, mantra upasana and swarasikhi. Mantra upasana is you hear the Bhagavatam to create a picture in your mind to inspire you with devotion. And swarasikhi is advanced meditation where the pictures come together like frames in a movie. And you have the movie of Krishna. So I'm going to go from the beginning, read the verses until what we're up to today. And create that picture. So the first verse is Sukadeva Goswami says, when Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attended the age of Poganda while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of his lotus feet. So the first words are tatracha. After this, it's a new age, and it's very significant because with different ages come different responsibilities. Like right now, I'm staying in the room of, well, she's moved upstairs, but this was the room of a young teenage girl. I think she just graduated high school. And every year at my Vyas Puja, she would come and do a Bharat Natyam dance with great devotion since the age of 5. And now she's 17. So now I see out in front, right where I can see her, is her car. With the growth in age comes a increase of the variety of loving exchanges you have. That's the way it is. When you're a little baby, it's only your mother. You don't have friends. And when you sit now Krishna can have friends. And not only friends, girlfriends. The gopis will be introduced slightly in this. Just the forest. Where they would go to the forest. So Poganda. Krishna has come at a particular age. Now, the rasa is, now, the parents' love of Krishna. Each relationship has a flavor, and the flavor of that love, a vatsalya ras, is anugraha or mercy, which requires an object of mercy, and therefore God appears as a young child. And you know, as the child becomes older and more capable, they're less and less of an object of mercy or parental love, which is I am your maintainer and I am your protector. And then there is that tension that the mother will never, or father will never want to see the capability because it's antithetical to what their love is. So Krishna's parents, even though there's just one word, tatvacha, pagandavaya, now after this, he's come of the particular age, there's great anxiety, which is called vyabhichari bhav. It's one of the transitory emotions that is increasing this rati or this love to come to rasa, the highest love, the mother. So this motherly love, now my child will go to the forest. And I spoke about that extensively, the resistance. But finally, they were forced to do it because Krishna had become an appropriate age. They couldn't resist it. Even when he was younger, this was his. And on a particular day, on the, let's see if it lists here. The Shukastami, the eighth lunar day of the bright fourth month of Kartik Gopastami. This is from the Padma Purana. Krishna became a cowherd boy rather than a calfherd boy. The calves only in Vraja, only around. Now we can take out the cow. And it's very interesting, those of you who are in terrible separation from Vrindavan, I will increase your separation, because we all know that most beautiful place in Vrindavan between Jawet, where Radharani got married, and Nandagram, where Krishna lived, and the halfway point meeting place, that walk from Jawet to Ter Kadamba. And on Gopastami, to this day, all the cows of Nandagram come. If I go to Vrindavan this year, anybody who's around, let's go to Gopastami at Ter Kadamba, where all the gwalas, the cowherd men, where all the cowherd men come to the cows, bring the cows and celebrate this glorious day. So Krishna took up this task, and engaging in the company of his friends, they left. And what does that leaving mean? There's so much separation in Vrindavan. In fact, there's one story of one gopi with her child, and Krishna was leaving Vrindavan. In fact, Prabhupada, in the place he left in his room, to the right on the wall, when he was leaving the world, there were two pictures there. One was Krishna and the gopis, and another was Krishna and Balaram leaving the village of Vrindavan. And the residents of Vrindavan are starting to feel this great separation, which is an expression of deep love. You don't feel separation from something unless you're very attached to it. And of course, there's one story that one lady, Krishna's leaving to the forest, and she has to get the water from the well. And she has a little child there, and she puts the rope around the child and is about to put in the water. No, stop. Stop. Oh. She tied it around the bucket. So Krishna is about to leave. And then, thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, and we mentioned that, when Krishna tries to reciprocate, and the nature of Krishna's enjoyment is his love for his devotees, and the love of his devotees. It's the ultimate reality. Prabhupada makes that so clear. What other definition of ultimate reality can there be but the highest love? We don't have any other frame of reference within our experience to understand that the highest reality is anything but the most pure and selfless love. And therefore, Krishna desiring to enjoy a more intimate aspect of that love, Vrindavan manifests. And within Vrindavan, now the forest of Vrindavan. And Lord Madhava sounded his flute, Udiriyan. Udiriyan means loudly. The resonance of Vrindavan, they understand the language of Krishna's flute. Because what kirtan is and with what music is, ideally, it's when the bhava in the heart is expressed by the discipline of music. So it expresses something. Good music should talk to you. And Krishna's flute playing talks to the devotees because it's a manifestation of his heart. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it explains that there are four qualities that Krishna has that no other living entity or even manifestation of God has. 64. Narayan, Vishnu, they can have up to 60. Krishna has 60 plus four more. And they all express his expression of intimate love, which Narayan doesn't express because he's playing the role of creator. So when you're in position, it covers personality. God doesn't have position. Krishna doesn't have position. That's what Krishna means. God, who takes his guard down, he doesn't, when position doesn't cover personality, the full manifestation of the person comes out. And it comes out in his beauty. It comes out in the variety of relationships he has. It comes out in the variety of pastimes or activities that happen in those varieties of relationships. And ultimate, and the flute playing. Why the flute playing? It's a jazz instrument. And what's a jazz instrument? It's something where the heart is expressed intimately. You really just let all your feelings out. So the flute is to let God's feelings of love out and amplify those feelings. So what's happening here is this sound of Krishna's flute is pervading the forest. And everyone is hearing their love for themselves personally, because it's God. It's not restricted, it's unlimited. So everyone is hearing the flute as Krishna's love for them. So when the cowherd boys, surrounded by the cowherd boys who are chanting Krishna's glories, they're doing a kirtan and they're singing about Krishna's beauty and his flute and his sweetness in various ways. But they're not only expressing that love, they're experiencing Krishna's love through the loud playing of his flute. The loud play, he's announcing his love. And he's not only announcing his love, he's announcing his joy in being with those and that place, which is a manifestation of that love. So it's rasa. It's just overwhelming love is just being expressed. And the sound is pervading everything. And the cowherd boys are doing kirtan. And some of the cowherd boys bring these wood drums. And they grab the leaves off the forest. And it's not prominent, but they play trumpets off of the leaves. And accompanied by Balaram. He kept the cows before him. We discussed this.
Come here.
He kept the cows before him out of love. He kept the cows before him out of his love for the cows and also his love for the earth. because the cows are trampling the earth. And Krishna loves the earth because the earth is dharani. Dharani means it holds. It holds, it feeds, and it maintains. So all shelter and all nourishment is a product of the earth. And Krishna is soothing the earth with his feet, and he's marking with his tilak, the tilak meaning when you wear tilak, the consciousness is proudly, I belong to the lineage and the teachers and ultimately the Supreme Lord. And therefore, even if the cows are trampling on the footprints of Krishna, the earth will hold them so dearly that they'll never be removed. So all this interaction is happening, even out of love, the cows touching the earth. And the earth out of love, maintaining each footprint of Krishna to keep its tilak, its mark. I belong. The earth is announcing by every footprint, I belong to Krishna. I belong to Krishna. One of the manifestations of love. And he entered the Vrindavan forest, which was rich with flowers, with nourishment for the animals. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over the forest. So he's just looking there. Nirikshay, he's enjoying it. Because he enjoys love, and it's just this manifestation of love. This dead forest from when Krishna left, where the deers, when he came, they eat grass and they become so nourished. And when Krishna leaves in the evening, they become gaunt. And now Krishna is entering that forest, which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds. But first the bees, because Krishna is somehow, maybe today, because generally when he plays his flute, it's to a symphony of birds. And the birds don't have just one sound in Vrindavan, but they can sing in many, many different ways. They accompany his flute like a symphony. But now the buzzing of the bees, it's creating such a pleasant sound. Because the bees are actually Gayanta, they're doing kirtan, and which was enhanced. Now the sounds of the bees and what Krishna saw, what he saw and heard is now being enhanced by what he sees. And what he sees, as we discussed at the beginning, is this lake of crystal clear water, resembling the minds of great souls, those peaceful minds that are welcoming God, are free from dirty things. And they're so welcoming. So the lake is actually there in the consciousness, Krishna, this is for you. And so many beautiful lotus flowers and the wind carrying the fragrance. And the word is so nice, vatena drishtam. Drishtam means serve. Again, the wind is not just blowing, the wind is loving. And it's intentionally taking, you know, Vrindavan now, if you look at the temperature, I only know Fahrenheit, so excuse me, the international devotees with the arrogant Americans that have their own miles and degrees. It's 115 degrees. It's going to get hotter too. So just imagine. I know that sometimes in Vrindavan, walking on the paths, the wind will carry a fragrance and it'll carry water and fragrance to cool the body. It's doing that lovingly. And then seeing all this is inspiring Krishna Rantum Mana, his mind turns to rasa. Because environment is a godly ontological effect, that environment facilitates love. Different types of love require different types of environment. This comes from the absolute reality. And it's almost not like Krishna desires in this half. It's a manifest fact. God wanting to enjoy this rasa, this environment is manifest to facilitate that. That's why when after 96 years, during the solar eclipse, where the residents of Vrindavan and the residents of Dwarka went to Kurukshetra to bathe at the time of the eclipse in Brahma Sarovara, and when Krishna met, when Radharani met Krishna after 96 years in there, and she saw Krishna, but Krishna was Rajavesh. She was in the dress of a king. He was surrounded by his retinue. And therefore, in one sense, he couldn't be Krishna, because Krishna is not just the person Krishna. It's the person Krishna when Krishna is manifesting himself fully in love, which you can't do when you have a position. He really couldn't be Radharani's lover when his environment demanded a reverent object to facilitate the love of those people for the king. So Radharani saw Krishna, and there's that famous poem that Lord Chaitanya was singing. It's the same moonlight night of the month of Chaitra. And the same Malati breezes are blowing in the air. But I am not happy here. I want you in the days of my youth under the Vitasi tree. I want you in Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan means the environment that facilitates the most intimate love, which facilitates my love as your intimate lover. So Krishna, this auspicious atmosphere that's meant to facilitate God's desire for intimate love. And now the primeval Lord saw that the stately trees with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burdens of fruits and flowers were bending to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus he smiled gently and addressed his elder brother. So Vanaspatim, the trees are called Vanaspatim. They're stately. When you stand like this, very aristocratic. You slunched up like this, it's not aristocratic. Okay. Aristocratic. The trees are so tall and they're so aristocratic. And he saw those stately trees, and they had beautiful reddish flowers and beautiful fruits and flowers. Prabhupada said that pious trees have fruits and flowers, and therefore most of the trees today are impious and useless. But when he described the city of Dwarka, he said, pious trees. Wouldn't that be wonderful if all the trees, I know in the ashram we have in Colombia, there's two mango trees, thousands of mangoes. I remember every year in Puri, we go to this one village, and it seems like a paradise because it never gets cold in Puri. So the only dress that a man needs is a gumsho. Some people, that's all they have is a gumsho. And we go to this incredible village. It's like what I'm reading here. It's so beautiful. And then we have some classes under a tree. And under one tree, it looks like one tree has 1,000 coconuts. So it looks like a person could live without anything. If they had nothing, they can just be under a tree with a gumsho and go bathe in the lake and go to the bathroom in the forest and then eat coconuts. Worse comes to worse. So these trees, they were very pious, and they're bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. And they're very, very humble. And there's very many indications here of Krishna's character, his personality. One, why is he affected by the trees? Because in his heart, they could move. They could move, and that affected his heart. The trees couldn't move, and that affected Krishna's heart. And he saw that they had a very humble mood. Even though they're so exalted, actually, it's not just trees. They're great souls. But they had a humble mood, and they were thinking, we are committed so many offenses that we cannot move to see Krishna. Krishna saw almost their disability, and they had humility about it. And that attracted Krishna's heart. The first thing he saw was, look at the trees. And they were aristocratic, and they bent with the red flowers to Krishna's feet, as if saying that the red lac on your feet is worthy to be on our heads. But the trees, Krishna is also thinking, yes, that's true, they can't move. But what devotion they perform. Because in worship, what do you need? Patram pushpam talam toyam. If you order me water, fruit, a flower, or a leaf, three out of the four things that can be offered to Krishna in devotion are coming from the trees. So who else has that facility, ability to serve? And by Krishna's inconceivable potency, there is not a flower or fruit in Vrindavan that is not accepted by Krishna out of love, eternally. You see, we tend to think of excitement in terms of movement rather than consciousness. That's what I was thinking in terms of japa, because I'm doing more these days because of this situation. What else you do? I don't work. I don't have family. I don't go anyplace. What do you do? There's nothing else to do. What do I do all day? So chanting. And then I'm thinking, okay, I'm chanting. Not boring. Why? Because what is excitement is not activities, but consciousness. The ultimate excitement is consciousness. The ultimate excitement is love. The ultimate excitement is devotion. So these trees can eternally be trees in their dynamic life of eternally offering flowers to Krishna, inconceivably. So Krishna, and then because Krishna is cultured, see, the trees are actually thinking and all the flowers are thinking, Krishna is coming. Let us welcome him. Let us offer the best. Later, there's going to be a verse, Nisarga Satam, the symptom of a saintly person is he offers the best to others and the guest. So Krishna is so cultured, he deflects the praise to his brother, Balaram. That's a cultured person. A cultured person is not seeking praise. He's more interested in the happiness and glorification for others. And that is so tough within the material world. We are so rooted in this body and this false ego that this is our spiritual struggle. And that ego is also our misery because it attaches us to the body, attaches us to control, and is the source of all disappointment because we're not the controller. And when you have that faith, you become disturbed because the world moves this way against me and that way. I'm not the controller. I wanted this, it moves here. I wanted this, it moves here. I have this, I'm losing it. I don't have this, I want it. I hanker, I lament, or passion and ignorance, hankering, passion, lamenting, I lost. But one who has consciousness of service, it does not matter which way the environment moves. That's just another way that Krishna is offering himself. I'm saying this, but in English, we have an expression, easier said than done. But we have to develop this consciousness. And all our upheavals, all our difficulties, all our struggles are simply an impetus to change our consciousness from control and enjoyment to service. Then there's no disturbance in any circumstance. Because it's just another opportunity to serve. Very difficult. That's why it says that bhakti, the process is difficult. The process is simple. The application is difficult. The process is simple because it's not a material facility. Enjoyment and control, the process is difficult. Gyan is difficult. Because it deals with the ability to control. The mind has to be so, it's dependent so much on your environment, the motive. Let me rephrase that. But service can be done in any circumstance. That's the quality of bhakti, it's universally applicable. But the application is difficult. Because we have to give up the thing we're more attached to than anything else. And that is our conception of independence and superiority. So this, and Krishna immediately everyone is Jai, Jai, Jai Krishna. And he's going, Balaram, look how everyone is worshiping you. Cultured person, not seeking praise. And I told this morning when Prabhupada came to leave the world, and I was there in Vrindavan, and when he sat down, he heard that his disciple, Jayananda, had left the world, and Prabhupada just started talking about him. He helped me. I remember Prabhupada in his heart, he helped me so much. I remember how he was saying that. And what was Jayananda's quality? When Prabhupada would come, he would ask, where is Jayananda? Because he was always serving. He was never moving to the front. So next week, we'll continue with Krishna entering the forest and more about the trees. Okay, what we'll do now, I'll go about 10 more minutes because with my Niyama Seva, I should start chanting soon. But anybody have a reflection? And that's a term that Vaisheshika Prabhu used. It means something that made you think more. Jamuna Jaya, Haribol.
Haribol, thank you for both classes today, Maharaj. You have indeed increased my longing for Vrindavan. Can't wait to go. But I was really reflecting on two things. One is the longing that the people had for Vrindavan, like, don't go, don't go. And so often we're the opposite. We're like, don't come, because we're not attentive and we don't read. We have the exact opposite mood. And then what you were just saying about service, oftentimes we try to be unlimited in getting power, but actually we're unlimited when we serve, because like you once said once, you can't always enjoy, but you can always serve. And in that way, that's how we're unlimited.
Well, I like that one. You can't always enjoy, but you can always serve. That's a good one. Thank you.
It'll be in a button.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else like to share a reflection? Thank you.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Raja.
Here. Raja.
Hi.
Haribol.
I love that when you said that even the earth wanted to hold on to Krishna's footprints. Even the earth said, I belong to Krishna. That was a really beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's such a that's why I make sure I have my tilak in the class. Although I haven't put it on since the morning, but I spend a lot of good time in the morning doing it right. In that mood, because when you read the Shastra, you become inspired in such small things. You find out how they're devotional. Okay. Thank you so much. That's nice.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to share something? Reflection?
Yeah. Good morning, Maharaj. This is Isabel. Thank you for a great class. And I'm going to echo what Jamuna Jaya said. You talking about Vrindavan makes me want to go back there, and I haven't even been there yet. But the way you speak about it and about Krishna and stories is just another level of, you know, greatness to the stories. And something that stuck with me before you spoke about, before you started talking about the Tenth Canto was that you said that our essence is service, like liquidity is the essence of water. And that really stuck with me. That's like something that I could put in my mind like an imprint for the rest of my life. I love that.
Thank you, Isabel. And let me know when you want to come to Vrindavan.
I definitely want to go right now.
I do too. I do too. But even if you're in India now, you can't go to Vrindavan.
You can't go to Vrindavan. Hopefully next year. It's my goal. That's all I've been thinking about for a while now. So hopefully.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You.
Okay. Anybody else like to say, have a reflection?
Hi, Bill Maharaj. Oh, sorry.
Hello, who's this? Hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, it's Jai Kishori.
Okay, yes.
So when you were talking about the trees, that just really touched my heart that Krishna had such compassion for them because they couldn't move. And it reminded me of when I had heard Damodar Leela related, and they said that once Krishna was bound, he had compassion, that the release of the sons of Kuvera from the columns was that once Krishna was bound, he had this infinite compassion for those who were bound.
Wow.
I thought that was just so beautiful.
Well, compassion is the most attractive quality that one has, which is why Lord Chaitanya appears as, Krishna appears as Lord Chaitanya, because he's Odarya, he's magnanimous. And that attract, even Sukadeva Goswami, when he left the womb of his mother and Vyasadeva is trying to get him back, he sent his Sanskrit students and they were chanting various verses. And when they got to a few verses, it attracted him, like I have to go back and hear about Krishna. And one was, Aho Bhakiyam Kulakutastanam. How merciful is Krishna that even though Putna came disguised as a nurse with deadly poison on her breast, he accepted her as his mother. And she got the same destination as Mother Yasoda. So how merciful is Krishna? Okay, thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yes. Siddheshri, hi Bo.
Siddheshri, thank you so much for the amazing class. It increased more and more the desire to go to Vrindavan. And please consider me for the Gopastami's Yatra.
For what?
For Gopastami's Yatra.
Oh, yeah. If we're in Vrindavan at that time, let's go to Gopastami at. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Wow, so many nice people from around the world. From every continent, actually, we have people here practically. Good. Anybody else like to say hello or share a reflection?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna. I really enjoyed the Leela you said. And the Katha, I loved it. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Okay, thank you. I'm so nice to have, it's such a pleasure for me to have you and your mother in my class. I mean,
thank you.
I never thought I could be so close to your country, you know? I didn't even know that this can enter in there, you know? But somehow I feel my desire is being fulfilled to actually visit.
Thank you very much.
If anything changes, I'll be on the first plane.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bo, Gail.
Yeah, you threw me a bit of a curve when you were kind of explaining that verse that you often quote, that, you know, for one who has faith in Guru and Shasha, the import of the Vedas is revealed.
Yeah.
Well, you explained the import of the Vedas as being something like the removal of the false ego. Yeah. And I totally wasn't expecting that. I was expecting something more along the devotional lines, you know?
Well, that's the basic thing. That's the basic thing of the Vedas. That cuts across all of its teachings, indirect and direct, is to remove the false ego. Of course, the ultimate goal of removing the false ego is muktir hitva yata rupam sarupena vibhasita, being situated in your own sarup. But I got that from many, many different places. Mm. That's what it's trying to do, the basic conception. Okay? Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Anybody else?
Hi, Bo Maharaj.
Hi, Bo.
Both you and I have some reflections. I really liked, I connected some points that you made about environment. where you were speaking about the necessity and definition of what a sacred space is a space which facilitates loving exchange, and how you were describing that in Vrindavan, and how the air carries the fragrance and the water. And I just connected that to what you said just in the very beginning. I think it was quoting Yogananda, that our environment has more power to facilitate change than our willpower. And so I was just connecting those two, that if we cultivate the spaces around us such that they facilitate loving exchange, then they will transform our consciousness more powerfully than we can just do by our own will.
Right. And not only that, but make them in the mode of goodness that facilitates relationships, which means cleanliness. That's the object of sight, and lack of clutter.
Yeah.
You know, simplicity and cleanliness is the object of sight and goodness. So it actually affects the consciousness. Mm. And, you know, there's also things, and there's a science of Vastu, how, you know, building, you know, just, yeah, but environment is pretty potent. That's important. Jamuna.
Yeah, thank you so much for the class, Maharaj. Definitely so many beautiful points, but one thing that struck me that you said was, it's not the activity, but it's the consciousness that gives enjoyment. And so it's such a simple point, but we tend to forget that, just thinking that whatever activity I'm attracted to, my false ego is longing for, that's going to give me pleasure. But ultimately the consciousness, right? You're not bored sitting in the room chanting japa.
You have to come to that point if you want to sit down, because nothing's happening.
Right.
So you have to have that faith to a certain degree. Thank you. That's nice. Okay, great. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, then.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Sri Gandharvika.
Oh, Haribo. Great. Now you're finished with your exams now, so.
Yes, finished.
Do you get a break?
Yes.
Okay, well, enjoy.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I should mention to the people also, I once showed a video of a leopard. It wasn't Vrindavan, but Lila Velasini sent me the video, and she only sends me videos from Vrindavan, and she didn't mention it wasn't from Vrindavan. So it was someplace else. It was Punjab. But it's still pretty far out video. Okay. Then I'm going to head out now. This was great. I'll see hopefully most of you on Wednesday.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oi!
Hare Bol.
Wow. Great to see you both. Wow.
Likewise. Thanks so much for class.
Okay. Hare Bol.